All right, it's Wednesday evening. We are back. Episode 55. I write it down every week now so I don't forget.
That's good, because I definitely will.
yeah, that's the only way I can remember it now. At this point, I have to write it down. It's just, it blends together, right? So anyways, I don't even know where to start. Short week. We were just talking short week in Canada, right? Had the Monday off. Yep. Which has completely messed my schedule up. I'm a day behind on everything now. So that's always fun. I guess the good thing is tomorrow's already Thursday. So that's
true.
That's good, the week is right?
Almost over already. I've
just
had an extremely
like
short week as well.
Yeah.
I took yesterday off as well.
Yeah. Oh, very. Oh, so you had an extra long weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to do that in September. In
nice.
Labor Day, I think I'm going to tack on before it. So you get the extra day. Why not, right? It's the end of summer.
Why not?
Yeah, I'm waiting for, I haven't heard it yet, but I'm waiting for the CNE ads at this point.
Ooh, it's got to be, I mean, that's coming up soon, right? Last week of August?
Yeah, like usually for me, as soon as I hear the first CNE ad is where I get that slight disappointment. You're like, oh man.
Disappointment.
Yeah, I guess it means the summer's over, right? Like,
oh, sure.
As soon as you hear that, you know it's getting close to the end. Sounds awfully morbid, but yeah. Yeah.
That's
there'll be
true.
Snow on the ground. Right? I'll have to start wearing my Winter is Coming t-shirt again just to piss people off.
Yeah, I guess that feels like that's a little harsh. Come on, you can't inflict winter on people like that.
Yeah, my favorite time to wear it is like May. Just when it starts getting warmer, people are like, son of a, it's back. It's coming back. All right. No. Where do we want to start? There's a fair amount of AWS news here, but I think where we have to start is Kiro Crew.
Okay.
Have you heard about this?
Kiro Crew. Yeah. I saw the link and I saw the announcement.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of, I don't think it's a stretch anymore to say that Kiro is now like a suite of products, right? You've got Kiro CLI, you've got the Kiro IDE, and now you have Kiro Crew. I immediately downloaded it and fired it up. And my first impression, I don't know if you've tried it yet, but my first impression is this is the technical person's version of the Amazon Quick desktop. Remember they released that, like it's the same sort of thing. It's just a little desktop app. And I have not used Amazon Quick Desktop. I fired it up when it was free. I'm unwilling to pay for it at this point. I think it's another $20 a month or something. But like for my memory of it was like you tie it to your email, you tie it to your Slack, you tie it to your calendar, and it kind of pulls all that stuff in. It felt non-technical, right? This is kind of the same thing. But for a technical person, you tie it to your GitHub, your GitLab, like where your repos are. It has this idea of well, they call it a crew, right? Because it has crews of agents that can work away on stuff for you autonomously. Oh, and the other thing is, and Darko showed us this last week, or tried to, but I didn't have my set up properly, done properly. There's a Kiro web version too, where like if you're kind of on the go or whatever, you can use your Kiro web instance to see your what they call a session that I think I didn't try it today, but I think that session information may or may not be coming from Crew. So you're almost able to talk to Crew remotely is kind of the way. I hope I'm not too off there, but that's kind of the sense of it. So you've got all these things, right? And what I really liked about Crew, I installed it and it just imported all of my workflows. It just basically said, well, I can import stuff. Do you want me to? And I'm like, yes, of course. And it went and it found all my Claude skills.
Okay.
It sucked in my custom MCP, everything.
Oh,
so
really?
when I got it going, my first thought was, oh crap, like you and I have talked about this before, kind of once you get your workflow, it's very similar to an IDE in the sense that you're kind of like, I'm not going to change because it's too much effort to change. This thing, like, it has all the skills that I've been working on that help me with my workflow, you know, ingesting meeting information, just basically tasking with going to GitLab or GitHub and finding the issue or the work item that it thinks it should work on. Like, I've built all those skills over the last months, right? Even my memory system, it
picked it up just
picked
fine,
it up yeah. through my Docker MCP toolkit. So it pulled all of that in.
Okay.
So yeah. I was really impressed. I used it all day today. Oh, yeah. One other thing. I fired it up. I pay for Kiro, right? So I have a Kiro okay. Pro subscription or whatever. And it kept saying I was on the free tier. And I'm like, what the heck? So I'm poking around. I actually asked Claude to help me with it. And it's like, I don't know anything about this, man. So I'm like, go research. So it researched, didn't find it. It turns out, and I hope this is at least remotely factually correct. It relies on the Kiro CLI. And what I noticed, and I never noticed this before, I've said to you before, like, for me, the Kiro CLI is probably the best part of Kiro. It gives you that little chat program. It's got the auto completion and all that. I'd never realized, and maybe this is a newer feature, I don't know, but you can also log into your Kiro subscriptions with it. So for some reason, whether most likely user error, I had somehow tied it to my builder ID, you know, that AWS builder thing, yeah. which okay. is just free, right? So yeah. it was pulling in. By it, I mean crew. It was pulling in my credentials, I guess, for lack of a better, from the CLI.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, you just have the free thing. So once I figured that out, I got it switched over to Kiro Pro. I did burn probably over half of my allotted, I don't know what they call
weekly
them.
Limit?
Weekly, try usage? Monthly.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So in fairness, though, right, I'm only doing the $20 a month plan. So you got to take that right. with a grain of salt. I think, okay. you know, obviously, if I was to go up to the equivalent of what I'm spending for Claude Max, which would be like, well, the $100 plan, I don't know what they call that. You get way more credits or whatever they call them. And I have been using, when I first turned it on, it didn't allow me to use Opus. It kept crapping out on Opus. But I think in hindsight, that was because of my weird thinking I have a pro subscription, but logged in CLI with my free subscription. So maybe under that free subscription, I didn't have access to some of the newer models, right?
Makes sense.
Yeah, but as soon as I switched it to auto, it came right to life. I have no idea what model it was using. But I tasked it on a bunch of, I don't know, jobs, things that had been lingering around in some of my personal projects that I just have been like ignoring. Yeah. Like ignoring or just not having the time to go and work on it. But it was very chat-body in the sense that I had to talk to it quite a bit to keep it working. So I do want to spend some more time on it and try to figure out the idea of more autonomous agents, because the pitch that I've seen a bunch of times on LinkedIn since the announcement is I wake up in the morning and I have all this work done.
Seems like this is their orchestrated like agent team application.
Definitely worth a look. I thought it's really pretty to look at. Like, they've done a really nice job on the interface, like nice sidebar. It's got tools that you can pull in. You've got like a knowledge section. It's very, the UI is easy to look at and you can find stuff. They've done a good job on that. But it is a UI. And like you and I talk about a lot, right? Increasingly, it's more and more command line. I think there is a command line option because I was tooling around with Claude last night and I was asking, and it's like, I'll fire up Kiro crew for you. And it ran a CLI command. And I was like, I don't know what this thing's doing, but I'm going to leave it. It ran a, for lack of a better word, like a job almost in Kiro crew, by running a CLI command. So it does have some sort of CLI functionality, but I really, it was very late and I just was, the battery was on empty at that point. So I saw it, I saw it pop up and I was like, oh, I'll worry about that later, and wandered off and did something else. So if you haven't tried it, you just got my, almost let's say
5 minute spiel,
probably longer than that, 10 minute spiel on Kuro Crew. I am not
cool.
Yeah,
not sponsored.
I'm not sponsored. It's just I really enjoyed working with it today. It was pretty slick. So
were you able to get work real work done with it?
Okay. I'll save some of the things I did for the personal projects part, but yeah, it did real work for me today. And it closed some stuff that was just lingering that I knew I needed to do, but just kind of was busy doing other things. So I thought, I'll have it work on some of this stuff as I do other things in Claude, and just see how it does for the day. So yeah, I think you should try it. I think it's worth a shot. For $20 a month, even if you burn through your 1,000 tokens or whatever they call them, I think at $20 a month, you get 1,000 credits. Let's call them credits. And then you burn those credits at different rates based on the model that you're using, right? So if you if you use Opus 5, you're probably like 2 times your credit rate or something like that. Even if you burn through it like me in a day or two, I think it'll give you a good sense of what it's capable of doing. And then you just cancel your Kuro subscription if you don't want it anymore.
Right. Well, that makes sense. I mean, it's open source too, so you could just rip it apart if you wanted and mess around and try and wrap Codex or Claude with it too, which is probably what I'll end up doing in the end. I will give it a try.
Yeah.
It looks like it's just a wrapper around Kuro CLI, basically. So
yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's got a nice little front end on it now. And it supports all the... Do I have it up and running still? I do. Let me see. What models do I have? Opus 5, it's defaulting for some reason to 4.8. It's got 5.6 Sol, Terra, Luna, the older Opuses. It's got all of them. And then it's got some open source stuff. Older DeepSeek, like 3.2, Minimax 2.5, GLM 5, Quen 3. Worth a shot. And if you didn't have something that needed, you know, a lot of heavy lifting, you could like revert to one of those cheaper models, like the open weighted ones, and save your tokens.
That's kind of compelling, right? If you can get a lot of quality work out of a lighter open weight model, I'd be interested in seeing how that performs.
So yeah, I'll stop with my spiel. I think it's worth a look. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's going on my to-do list.
Yeah. What else is here? I learned something today that I didn't know existed. Mm. There is a Security Hub extended version or something.
Oh.
Extended plan, they called it. Yeah, that's what I... So there's a new feature available in Security Hub extended that what caught my attention was it has checks for supply chain attacks. And you and I talk about that so often, right?
It's so important now.
So I went and looked at it and I was like, what is this extended thing? And it looks it doesn't look like it's small business sort of focused. It does feel, I just had a quick look today, so I kind of knew a little bit about it. It looks like an enterprise version of Security Hub in the sense that you have integration with third-party tools and stuff like that. It looks like it maybe works. It extends it outside of AWS. But I did put it on my to-do list to go figure out what the heck this thing is. It's the first time I've ever heard of it. And I do think for a couple of my customers, it might actually make sense, right? For larger customers.
Yeah.
It's got these additional features.
If you're a major org, like a multinational company, this could make a ton of sense.
And
socket looks like, at least.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of stuff, right? And because of the supply chain attacks we talk about all the time, it grabbed my attention in the news release. Speaking of supply chain attacks, Kuro Crew has this idea of I don't know what they call it, extensions or something like that. So there's a same idea. It's like a tool marketplace kind of thing. Right now it looks like it's all Kuro Crew, so I don't know how you get your tools into it. Maybe it's some sort of open source thing you can do. I did notice one in there that was from an author that was not Kiro Crew, which again, you know, not saying there's anything bad there. Just thinking again about what we talk about all the time with supply chain attacks is just because it's new doesn't mean you should turn on all the bells and whistles when you don't know where it's coming from. Right.
Definitely so, not.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the other one? Oh, I mentioned GPT Sol, Terra, Luna as being available in Kiro Crew. They also now are available on, well, I guess they've been on Bedrock for a bit, but now they have more context. So you're up to a
1 million now,
token
right?
context. Yeah. So,
okay.
Doesn't mean you, again, you should use all million of that token context, but you can load larger things into it if you want. Right.
If you, I don't know what you're shoving into that, but it's there.
It's there. It's there if you want it. The one thing that, I wanted to ask you about is with these, I've been noticing lately, and it kind of ties back to one of the personal projects I'll talk about here in a second, is this idea of token caching. I don't know how long that's been around, but I've just been learning about it a little as a way to sort of manage some costs and stuff like that. And it was one of the things that they mentioned in here too, was that with these larger context models in Bedrock, you could potentially save some bucks by using caching, token caching. Do you use that? Do you know what it is? Like, I'm just trying to learn about it a little bit now. Is caching? Yes. Is that essentially what it is?
It's pretty much what it says. Yeah, you're caching the tokens you're sending in and getting out, right? All of the big TUI apps do this automatically through the API now, or through their APIs.
Yep.
So Codex does it, Claude does it, and I assume AWS does it now through Bedrock. I hope so. I hope you don't have to turn that on.
I don't know. It's been catching my eye lately, and I thought, oh, we're going to talk tonight. You'll know what this is. And I kind of had a good sense of it. And you're saying that most of the modern tools will do it automatically now. You don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, like think about it like this way, like you're sending up an entire repo of code, for example, to the model to consume. You don't want to do that 1,000 times over a session, right? Or pay full price for that every time. So they'll just cache the tokens you're sending up and then reuse that for various prompts.
Yeah. Makes sense, right? Makes sense.
Yeah.
You shared, I'm going to hand over the reins to you on these next three. There was a DynamoDB, there was a web search for model grounding in Bedrock. That was a mouthful. And then there was something CloudFormation related, MCP server. So why don't you walk us through those three?
Sure. Yeah. So DynamoDB released vector search as a native real-time feature. So now you can store your operation, like your embeddings, in DynamoDB instead of having to use PG or OpenSearch, which I thought was pretty compelling.
Yeah,
and you can do like it's pretty like it scales. I mean, obviously it scales infinitely because it's Dynamo, right?
Yeah.
But you get like 4,000 dimensions, various types of vector arrangements like Euclidean or dot product. So I thought this was interesting, and it's another to-do item for me. Is I'm probably going to move my second brain over to Dynamo now that it's available like this.
Yeah. Probably be like. You know, I was thinking when I saw this, kind of along the same lines, right? I'm running an Aurora database, serverless database with PG Vector, and I'm kind of wondering maybe it makes sense to move it over there. I guess really for me, it comes down to cost. Like, you know, the other nice thing would be that I wouldn't have the occasional timeouts that I'm getting right now with Aurora because I'm using serverless and scaling it to zero to help me manage costs.
Yeah, you wouldn't have that
with you wouldn't have that with Dynamo, right? So interesting. So what do you have now? You've got OpenSearch, you've got Aurora with
Aurora
PG Vector,
Vector S3
tables
you can do
S3 vector tables, and now Dynamo. So you got lots of options.
Yeah, I tried to think of a data store where you can't use vectors now.
Yeah.
The list is getting shorter.
Sign of the times, I guess.
Yeah. It's all vectors.
Yeah. Speaking of vector embeddings, I'm going to go back to Crew for a second. It's got its own built-in memory, and I thought it was interesting. It uses a Qwen model for embedding.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of I kind of thought so with an Amazon product, you'd see, is it Titan that you see a lot of for embeddings?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
That's right.
I kind of was a little surprised when I saw that. I didn't look at it a lot because I've got my own context or memory or whatever you want to call it, right? So I just looked at the feature and moved on. But I wonder if you can change that to something else.
I bet you could.
Yeah.
I bet you could reconfigure. I mean, yeah. Quen is open weight or open source, right? So
yeah. Yeah.
Presumably it's more effective than Titan. Titan's pretty old at this point too, now that I think about it. It's been around for a while.
Yeah, I think it was one of the first ones that they sort of released, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Yeah. What do you use? So. Do you recall off the top of your head what you're using for your memory for embeddings?
Oh, I'm using one of the OpenAI ones, I'm pretty
okay.
sure.
Yeah.
I
stuck with Titan just because I had used it before and I was like, oh, just it's just there. I'll just use it. Yeah.
Good enough for the most part, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does the trick, right? What other one do you want to talk about here? Dynamo, web search.
Oh, so the web search one is kind of interesting. It's they're kind of bundling Codex capabilities into Bedrock. Mm-hmm. So this is essentially your Bedrock agents will be able to search the web and fetch semantically relevant snippets. They're not getting the whole web page necessarily, but they're getting the relevant sections.
Okay.
So that's getting built into Bedrock now, which, you know, will help with steering your agents and help you use some of that 1 million context, I guess.
Fill it up. Although you probably have a lot of people argue that you shouldn't do that because it gets dumber
with
the more context that you get, right? So, yeah.
But to the counterpoint, you can tell it, you can have it go research something from a known trusted source or whatnot and validate your result. So,
yeah.
That's
very handy, yeah.
And what was the other thing?
CloudFormation MCP server.
Oh, yeah. So there is a CloudFormation kind of, how would you describe this? Like an LSP for CloudFormation they release for Amazon released. I figured this might be up your alley, but it's like a type checker for your CloudFormation templates.
I will definitely check this out. I pulled it up as you were talking there. Let's see here. Walk through falls of steps, troubleshoot, end-to-end CloudFormation workflow with the IAC MCP server. Yeah.
The real question is, like, is it worth, like, one thing we might have to do is like a walkthrough of all of the AWS MCP servers because there's so many now.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And I'm thinking the same thing you are. Like, what is the
purpose?
Yeah. Like, because any agent can write a shit ton of CloudFormation nowadays, right? Like, they're all well trained on this. I did scroll down and it says here, validation of the template. You can ask the assistant to validate the template, and the MCP server provides two validation tools that wrap open source checkers, CFN Lint and CFN Guard. But again, like, in my world, that's all written into CI anyways, pre-deploy.
Those are all hooks, right?
Yeah, this kind of feels... I will look at this. It kind of feels like creating an MCP because you're supposed to create MCPs.
Because you can. Maybe
you
have an MCP quota to fill or something like that.
Yeah.
Not.
Although, not, you know, our intro song is MCP servers building MCP servers, which is based fact because that song was created out of a Slack channel conversation. So who am I to say anything bad about wanting to create an MCP server? So, you know,
fair
what? I guess the value to something like this is if you've got these workflows built already, meaning, you know, you've got your CI scripts with all of this kind of workflow built into it. Is there value here? No, maybe not. I shouldn't say no. Maybe there's less value. But if you are in a situation where you've often thought about doing that stuff, but just haven't had the time to actually do it, this might be an easier way to validate those templates prior to them being deployed, right? There's nothing wrong with adding these kinds of solutions in to make sure that those templates are good before you deploy them, right?
Yeah, fair enough. Or you give this to like a review agent on your who has access to your GitHub and away they go.
Yeah, it might be kind of cool, actually. I'm just flipping through it and seeing here. I'm trying to get a sense of what else it does. Like, they talk about validation, compliance checks, security check or syntax checks, deployments, probably worth a kick. But you're right. I think one session we should just call it the AWS MCP walkthrough. Just go through, because there's a lot of them.
There's many. There's definitely over 10.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like, and there's lots of point stuff now. Like, I was working on something there's like a CloudWatch one that allows you to pull in metrics and stuff like that. Yeah. It's got like 19 tools or something built in. I know that number because I was banging my head against the desk today trying to get it to work. I was trying to work it into basically a chatbot solution. So have like Bedrock Agent Core call a pre-built MCP that comes from a vendor, in this case AWS, and no luck so far, but I'll keep plugging away on that one.
Yeah, there's at least 50 of these kicking around.
50.
There's a lot of them.
You know what, you know, all joking aside, I'm not really surprised when you build a platform with more than 200 services in them that are all essentially just APIs that they've wrapped a GUI in front of. If you wanted to use the GUI, you know, layering an MCP in front of that, rightly or wrongly, the way I often think about it is MCPs are APIs for AIs. Well, that's say that fast, right? There's like a bunch of acronyms just strung together. It's like word soup. You know what I mean? Like if you've got an AI tool of some sort, MCPs give it easy access to tools to help it learn more about what the hell it's trying to do, right? So I think it makes a lot of sense. And we have this kind of massive platform. I guess I shouldn't be surprised with more than 50. Wow, it's a lot.
Yeah, but some of these are like per like individual database service. I'm
yes.
Like there's an Aurora one, a DynamoDB one.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Which makes sense, right? If you've got a very specific technology stack that you want to instrument or help sort of analyze using AI tools, why would you want something that covers Elastic Cache, you know, as an example, if you're not using it? Why is it there? So
it's bloat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very good. Well, lots of AWS news. I would sum it up as Kiro Crew. That's all you should be thinking about right now.
Okay. I'm installing it right now.
Yeah, I want next week. I want your review of it, and I'm going to keep using it and try to figure out how to get little agents, fleets of agents, actually doing stuff while I sleep. Scares the shit out of me, but you know, put it to a sandbox account or something, and just see what it does. Maybe
that's the thing.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm gonna. You know what? That's actually a perfect use case for my personal project this week too. Now that I think about it. So, but I'll get to that when we get there. Yeah.
Well, that's actually a great transition. That's all we had on the AWS end. Why don't you get us started with your personal project?
Oh, we got there.
Yeah, we're there already.
All right, perfect. Okay, so I guess what I've been working on is a DevBox setup, like a remote cloud VPS for working with agents and whatnot, which is like... Fuck. It's the perfect use case, I guess.
We're gonna start like wearing the same shirts to this and stuff. I'm gonna be like, dude.
No.
Okay, walk me through what you built.
Okay, so mine is probably more on the more efficient end than you like.
Thanks.
Yours is.
Oh, I thought you were gonna... Okay, yeah. I was like, oh, you're telling me I'm inefficient. Like, okay, thanks, man.
Yeah, not like capability wise. I went on the low. I went to like a spot instance setup on an ASG type situation.
Yeah, yeah.
But what the goal was, I wanted to be able to access this thing from Turbox on my phone, basically, and be able to see what's going on.
Oh, man.
This is my server.
What's the saying? Yeah. Great minds think alike.
You did not set up Termux.
No, but I did something very similar. walk me through your setup and how you're using it, and then I'll tell you about what I'm doing.
Okay. So my problem I was running into is because I've been doing all this Kaggle heavy simulation work, sometimes I'll my computer. Accidentally, like I'll spin up too many jobs at once, right? And then I'll eat up all my RAM, and then I'll have to reboot it, and then I'll be sad because I have to resume all my sessions.
I'll be sad.
Yeah.
I'll feel upset about it. Yeah, got it.
So I'm trying to, I was trying to figure out how I could get some kind of isolation from my local machine for all of my Claude code and open code and codec sessions. So what I've pretty much got is just it's just a Ubuntu AMI EC2 instance sitting on an ASG. It auto scales up or down, right? And it has Tmux and Mosh installed on it. So just in case I want to connect to it in so that the sessions will auto resume. And yeah, it's got a user data script to automatically refresh the Cloudflare link to it for my for the DNS access. Yeah, and I set up a quick setup bash script I can run on whatever device just to pull down the credentials and connect wherever I am. And I've synced up my Brain2 and the main projects I'm working on, and that's kind of where I've been doing a lot of dev work is on that machine.
How much has it cost you so far? Like when did you fire it up?
I fired it up like last week, and it's looking like it's gonna cost me like maybe $10 a month. Maybe.
I would call that cost of doing business nowadays, to be honest. Like,
Yeah,
yeah.
pretty much.
So I'm doing exactly the same thing minus EC2 at this point. So I've got my laptop sitting here. Okay. It's a little older now, right? It's an M2 Pro of some sort. It's pretty decent. So I have I run I'm
Yeah, MT's
pretty
still
much,
good.
yeah, there's nothing wrong with it, right? Although I was laughing as you said you run out of memory. I did run maybe a few too many things on it today, and at one point Claude came back and said, well, I can't run this because you're out of memory. And I was like, what? I'm like, you're full of it. So I opened up Activity Monitor and I'm like, no, I'm out of memory. Holy crap, what am I doing? So I had to go through and it's kind of like the too many tabs in Chrome syndrome, right? I was like, oh crap. So I had to thin it out. But I've got that. I'm pretty much running Herder now all the time. It's kind
Nice.
of the terminal that I'm using. So I've got Mosh installed on my iPad, on my phone, and your old laptop that I was asking you about that I got to get the key for at some point. I wanted to try that one too, right? And it was so funny. I threw it in a box and that was it. I never did anything with it. And I was like, oh, I wonder if I could fire that up just as a test. Like if I'm out with my buddy or whatever, and I could have leave my laptop here, take the iPad or the Air with me, and just connect to it. So I've been doing the same thing. I've been using my iPad primarily with a little mini keyboard that I've had for like eons,
Oh,
right?
nice.
And like this afternoon, I was sitting on the porch and I was talking to my laptop and I was tasking Claude with stuff. So yeah, we're doing the same thing, but I was actually thinking of maybe it's time to upgrade, like go get myself like a Mac Mini with a little bit more horsepower. Crazy the costs of those things and the lead time to get them now. Holy, if I see one more YouTube video of somebody saying, here's my 10 Mac Mini cluster that I use to run Hermes, I'm gonna lose my mind, because that's why you can't get these things anymore.
You can
Like,
run it on a cell phone. Like you don't need or Raspberry Pi. You don't need a
yeah.
you don't need a Mac
It's
Mini.
absolutely fantastic YouTube content. The problem
Oh
is
yeah.
For a person who just wants, like, I don't need a fleet of Mac Minis. I just would like one. I just want one, right? Oh well, yeah, it's
Your
three times
greed
the yeah the three
sickens
times the
me.
costs of what it used to be, and we'll see in 12 weeks. Like,
Oh yeah. It's
so
crazy. Every Apple product is like 30% more expensive. They bumped the
crazy.
prices this year. It's like 10 grand for a spec'd out MacBook Pro.
Oh yeah, it's nuts. I was just listening to another podcast. I think it might have been Pivot. You ever watch or listen to Pivot? Prof G and Kara Swisher. I think they were talking about Apple doing like hardware as a service or something like that. Or like the speculation is that's going to happen. So you pay a monthly subscription and you just get the new stuff. You don't actually own it anymore, which I know a lot of people are going to get really upset about, but with the costs of this stuff go just increasing all the time and the lead times to get it, it might make sense that it just becomes a service. It's like you and I've talked about it. We're going back to mainframe days. You just created yourself a mainframe solution.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like a remote terminals into a central machine. Totally.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, I mean, I guess that kind of makes sense for Apple. I mean, you have to, I guess it depends on what the subscription is, right? But like, yeah, it's getting harder and harder to source DRAM, VRAM, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And if you're a total Apple fan and you want a new phone every year or something, like maybe you get a certain time and then you can just trade in your phone for a new one. Like, I know a lot of people would like that rather than forking out what, $1,000 to $1,500 on a new phone. Maybe you just subscribe. I don't know.
Interesting. Like, yeah. you're leasing devices basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I guess a lot of businesses have done for ages. I know it's hard as a personal,
I like it.
Yeah. Like as an individual, it feels weird, but I think companies have been doing that for a long time, right? You just lease the gear and give it back.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense for a business. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I hate it as a consumer.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm necessarily a fan of it either. The one thing, you know, you do make me think, though, if an EC2 is going to cost you $10 a month and have more than enough horsepower to run what you need, then that really becomes your central workstation, for lack of a better word, and you connect to it. The one part of my setup that I didn't mention is Tailscale. So all my devices are on Tailscale.
Okay.
And, same thing, Moshi or Mosh or whatever it is. I'm running that on my laptop, not on my laptop, but on my iPad and stuff, and then just connect back. So
that makes a ton of sense. I mean, the alternative is to do what I'm doing, which is to use SSH keys or SSM fallback, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. Tailscale.
Yeah.
Makes things a lot easier.
That way, everybody can see everybody. I just leave Tailscale running on all my devices now, and then that way they can get to the internet. Regularly, but they can see each other too because I've got this network now. I don't know, this works so far. And I'm doing what am I doing? I'm grabbing on my iPad, I fire up Moshi or Mosh or whatever it's called, the little app with the cat with the two little eyes. I think we're talking about the same thing, right?
That's Mosh,
So in there, I just grab my public key off of my iPad and then save it on my laptop in my authorized keys file. And then it just connects right through Tailscale, like through the Tailscale network. So nothing just public works. And everything just works. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now I need to turn this into like a CNC, like a command and control type situation, and just have a little wrapper for my personal machine that I can use to run the actual jobs and do the work through, and then control it from that server. Okay, that's the next project.
You need a little Discord app or whatever so you can talk to it and turn it on, turn it off on demand and stuff. The possibilities are endless.
They are. Anything you can plug, you can jam together with with disposable wrapper code.
Yeah. Like, you made me think of one other thing. What was it? Shit, it went into my head and then boop, gone. I don't know what it was. Any other personal project news?
Other personal project news. That's the main one. I'm going to update my second brain system to use that DynamoDB thing now. I just saw the news item today, so I'll update that.
Yeah. I think I might try the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know what I don't know what Aurora's costing me a month, but I bet you Dynamo would be cheaper. Even though I'm turning off my Aurora database, I'm not using it, right?
There's no way that Aurora is going to be less expensive than DynamoDB what we're doing.
Not possible. Yeah, it's not possible. Okay, so you've given me a couple projects to work on. I've got to move my brain over from Aurora to Dynamo. And then maybe instead of worrying about trying to get a Mac, I will get myself an EC2 instance. Oh. Sorry, I left my gestures on. I just remembered your EC2 instance. Is it public IP or is it in a private subnet? What did you do there? How'd you do that part?
So I have Caddy working to like the little answer there. So it's in a private subnet, but I have that Fucknet and Caddy setup working.
Yeah,
so
yeah, perfect. Okay, so personal projects for me, Kanban is back. It is it is one of the projects just back today, and it's really the primary use case for Kiro Crew right now. I figured, you know, I had a backlog of stuff. It's like
that makes sense.
Increasingly, like I'm not using it a lot because I'm basically tasking agents for most of my work. But I'm like, okay, you know what? You know, work on a branch or whatever, and that way, if something does get buggered up, we can get back to where we were. But it went through and it closed up a bunch of just tasks that had been sitting there for a while that I decided not to work on because it was doing what I needed, and these were kind of nice little features that would just polish it a little bit but didn't need it. So Kanban's back without me really thinking about it a whole lot. And the other one is this city simulator Polis thing. I've spent way too much time on this thing. and a fair amount of cash at this point, because what I've done is I've like when it comes to Anthropic, I've said I'm not going to use my Claude Max plant for it because I wasn't sure what it was going to do. So, I set up an API for that. I have an API on Moonshot. I have an API on ZAI. I was using OpenCode, and I found that it worked really well with OpenAI, but there was a lot of latency getting to through it to get to originally GLM. And when I wired in, I can't remember what other model I wired into it, and it just kept getting throttled. It might have been GLM actually that kept getting throttled, one of them. So I opened up that directly. I opened up directly to OpenAI. I wired in Gemini as well. So I've got all these different models. And I've just been iterating on the idea of it, and I've run it. It decided to call it a tournament. So basically, a tournament is there are four cities. Each city is run by a different model, and a tournament is basically a rotation. It's like every model runs every city once, so we can kind of see
you play
how
a league, essentially.
Yeah, essentially, right? And I've run now like four sort of individual tournaments. What I love about it, man, it's really neat.
Yeah.
I think I'm starting to get enough data that you can kind of make some statements on how certain things work. Like essentially, so I don't know what I told you about it, but basically every city, you need three things for a city to survive. You need food, energy, and materials. But every city can only produce two of those three things. So it forces you to trade. But if a city wants to trade with another city, they make an agreement. I'll send you X number of energy for what it calls a tick, right? So a tick is like essentially a turn, right? So it's a turn based thing. So I'll send you X number of energy for X number of ticks if you send me materials back, but it's not a contract. So it doesn't necessarily mean that just because I said I'm going to send that to you, I will actually do it. And Opus, man, is a bitch.
Okay, so just rewind. Is this like a benchmark?
I don't know. Is it? I don't know if it's a benchmark. I don't know if it's statistically accurate enough to call it a benchmark. But I think you can infer certain things to models when they do it over and over and over again, regardless of the city that they're in, right? Opus will screw you. Like, it'll tell you it's going to send you 10 materials, and you're like, okay, I'll send you 8 food for that. And it's like, nah, I'm not going to send that to you, but thanks for the food. It's something else. And the other thing that I've learned is GLM. I thought GLM was kicking everybody's butt. Actually, it was an error in the way that I set up one of the first ones. Everybody has different levels, right? Like low, medium, high, extra high. GLM is interesting in the sense that low is the default, but low is actually high. So I ran one of the tournaments, I'm like, GLM is kicking everybody's ass, like not even close. Like it had almost a perfect score on like at that time there was like a cap on the population. You could only grow a city to a certain population, and like four rounds, it had perfect population across all four. And I was like, hold, nobody else is close. And then I started digging around a little more. And this is a great example of what we talk about here all the time. Just because a model tells you it knows what it's doing, it doesn't mean that you should actually trust it. Because I was like, this
100%,
like, I don't, this, there's something not right here. And I fell into this accidentally. I don't even know why I decided to do it, but I was like, I would be interested to know how many tokens each model is exchanging, inputs and outputs on each turn, right? To get an idea of, like, is this one really chatty compared to that one? And GLM,
right,
when I used low reasoning, and the reason I used low reasoning is every model had this low reasoning option. So I said, okay, we'll see if they're all the same. I'll make a number up. Like, Opus is sending 1,000 tokens, and GLM is sending 5,000 tokens, both on low. Yep. And I'm like, huh. So I started digging around, and what they do is low actually means high, in the sense that it uses a fair amount of reasoning, even in low. You have to actually set it to none in order to shut it completely off. So I've learned a lot about it. And as soon as I did that, GLM fell more into line with everybody else, and Opus is kicking everybody's ass. Like, it wins every time now. So,
it's screwing everyone at every turn.
Yeah, it's cheating, right?
Have you seen any of the models do like a tit for tat strategy?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They notice that Opus screws them, and then they don't trade with them for a while.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've done, and I think this is probably the coolest part of it, is it has a little script that it runs at the end that creates like a highlight reel, and it grabs like what it calls stories from the round, right? And it's like it's like, oh well, this started on tick 8 where X was shorting Y, and then Y started shorting X, and then it just, you can see it kind of escalate to a point where, you know, a city is almost going to die, and then they're like okay enough, and then they calm down again. So yeah, you do see some interesting little traits. I've spent a lot of time just watching this thing sort of play a game, right? And burn my cash for, at this point, I don't really know what the outcome of this is, but you know, I've had a lot of fun in trying to figure it out and kind of adjusting the model. I'm still figuring out, like, adjusting the rules a little bit. It's running in the background right now with a new test case to see what makes sense. But yeah, it's been a really fun little personal project, and I think I've learned a little bit of stuff over the duration, like, you know, the tokens and how, you know, just because it says it's low, you better read the documentation, because that's not what it actually means in this particular case. It's been a fun project. I spent a lot of time on it over the last week and a half.
It's a good little litmus test for like alignment, right? Like, there's various benchmarks that exist for alignment, but you can get like a little picture of who is more likely to maybe follow instructions better than not.
Yeah. I don't know how you would apply any of this to real world. Like, how would you take any of the learnings from it and say, I'm going to use model X over model Y based on what I saw in this. But it's been a pretty interesting little thought experiment, and I've always been into ideas of city simulators and like business simulations, and I think I'll just kind of keep iterating on this and see where it ends up. It, you know, I don't know what the hell it's for, but it's been fun. Just popped into my head when I should have been sleeping, and 2 weeks later I've built this thing that I don't know what it's for, but it's fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yep. It'll happen again.
Yeah. I thought of something the other day. I wrote it down somewhere. I was like, nope, you just don't do it, man. Just go and spend your time somewhere else. Okay. So let's shift gears again here to some Gen AI news. I'm going to jump around a little bit. I posted two articles from the CBC. And my thought was, as soon as the CBC starts writing multiple articles about AI, in a single week.
Or mainstream.
Yeah, something's going on, right? So the first one, I loved this. It was when Kimmy K came out, Kimmy K 3 came out. And I think, again, it's a great litmus test in the sense that this stuff is getting into the general population. The article is basically explaining what an open-weighted model means. And you know what? Honestly, it does a really great job just helping somebody like that keeps hearing about this stuff but doesn't really know what the hell that means. They now kind of have a nice, easy explanation what an open versus a closed weighted model is. I thought they did a really good job. It also made me chuckle a couple times in the sense that suddenly CEOs of North American AI companies are concerned that, you know, maybe open models access to these open models, AKA Chinese models, should be restricted because they're insanely cheap and ours are not. So they do touch on that as well. Sure. Yeah, we need more regulation. Once I'm at the top of the pile, I want to regulate it all. Yeah. So it was a good article. I enjoyed reading it. And I also thought that, what was the other note that I put down here? Oh, they used a really great analogy, a recipe analogy to help explain open-weighted models versus closed-weighted models. So they're like, you know, a recipe gives you the instructions. It tells you the weights, the measures of things that go into making that cake. A closed model doesn't, right? So with an open-weighted model, you understand the ingredients, right? And you could adjust those ingredients. You can customize it. I thought that was a really fantastic analogy. And then this led me to go over to OpenRouter because they were talking about Chinese models. Four of the top models on OpenRouter right now are all Chinese.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah.
Two of the top four are different versions of DeepSeek V4 Flash.
It's so cheap. You can't really beat it for price for performance, you know? That's they're crushing the commoditization of these models. I don't know what OpenAI and Anthropic are going to do in that regard.
But. Yeah, I read another article or listened to a podcast, and they're like, this is the Chinese playbook in a nutshell. Like, okay, you might have better chips than we do, but we can make something that's reasonably good for the vast majority of use cases, and I'll charge you 10 cents.
Yeah, 80% for pennies on the dollar, right? Like 80% of the value.
Crazy. You want to know which of the top four models in OpenRouter is not Chinese? Take a guess.
Is not Chinese in OpenRouter?
Yeah, it's the one non-Chinese model.
Is it Grok?
Nope. GPT-56 like Luna.
Luna. Okay. Well, they did reduce the price. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the like articles that we're going to talk about. 80% cheaper.
And
it went up. Yeah, that's okay. It went up close to 800% usage in whatever the measure was. I don't know. I didn't look at like, is that 30 days? Is that 7 days? I don't know. But it's like whoosh. And I think that's another example. It's a cost-effective model that in probably the vast majority of use cases, it's more than what you need to do that task. So why are you paying $30 input and $15 output when you can use one that's like $1.50? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And I mean, if you're like the big labs, like I guess you still have the cachet of having the frontier, like the most powerful thing to do the big important tasks and to do frontier scientific research and whatnot, like we're starting to see, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, for the day to day, like for automation tasks, you'd be foolish not to, right?
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
The price difference is so stark.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. It's like you commoditize intelligence, right? Is what this means.
Yeah.
So it kind of turns into a utility. I don't know what that means for the world, but
I don't know. I tend to think about it optimistically in the sense that these models ideally are cost effective and they give lots of people access to tools that they otherwise may not have access to. And I know that was the promise of the internet. Like, we've said that forever and ever, right? So does that come true? I don't know. I would hope that because these things continuously get cheaper, that it means more people have access to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
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 I think you're right though on the on the big blabs though, because you were talking about the cost reductions, right? 80%, but not on Sol.
Yeah.
Right. So it's on Terra and Luna, but not on their flagship. So the thing that I hope for, Terra,
right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Right. Like it's like scale, right? But what I'm hoping is, you know, the other big lab follows suit and says, yeah, if you want to use Fable, it's expensive, but if you want to go back and still use Opus 4.7, it's less expensive because it's now no longer the sort of leading edge model that we have. I would think that eventually these open weighted models will affect the price, especially if people continue to switch to those models, right? Hence why, like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's coming out saying, oh, we need to have regulation. Well, he's getting his butt kicked, so of course he wants regulation. Whereas the other two are like, oh, no, right? Like, or wait, I'm flipping that around. I've got that backwards, right?
You're flipping the script.
Yeah, flipping the script around. But yeah, you get the point. And you know, there's a reason why suddenly they want this regulation, because they're realizing, I think, that people are maybe afraid isn't the right word, but I bet you there'd be some hesitation originally saying, you know, I can use an American model versus a Chinese model. Ooh, maybe I shouldn't use that Chinese model, right? What happens to like, how's it being used and stuff like that? I think there's maybe less hesitation there now. Eventually money talks, right? If it drives your costs down.
Money talks, and if models are open weights and even open source, then there's even less hesitation, right? Like, that's just a thing that people could inspect and validate. Yeah. I mean, it's so crazy, the difference, right? Like, Fable 5 is $3.15 per intelligence index task. I'm just looking at artificial analysis, right?
Yeah.
And Kimi K3 is, you know, comparable performance by and large. It's like 86 cents. So that's almost not quite half the price, but in that range. Mm-hmm. And then you go down to DeepSeek V4 Flash is like 3 cents to do a task. So
it's no different than EVs, man. Like Chinese EVs, they're probably just as good and a lot less money. And I know geopolitically people are like, oh, you can't buy that. But a real person that just needs a car is going to look at a $40,000 car and compare it to a $20,000 car and go, what is this extra 20 grand giving me or getting me? And if they can't, if they can't figure out the value in that 20 G's, or maybe they just don't want to spend 40 grand, guess what they're going to do? Then I think these models are going to be no different than that.
Oh, 5.6 Luna, 5 cents for the same task.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not that different, right? Like, it's about as good as like 3.6 Flash, which was decent. Yep. It's about as good as GLM 5.2. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Money talks in the end, man. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What else do we have here? There was another CBC article about AI summaries, basically destroying human traffic going to actual websites because you're just on, you know, insert search tool of choice, right? Like, whatever tool it is, you've got AI summaries at the top. You read that. Do you continue to scroll and actually click on a website?
This is why Google was so fast to get on that, right?
Yeah.
I bet you, like, a lot of the volume of AI usage now, like, the vast majority is probably Google's AI overview.
Oh,
if you think about it.
Yeah.
It's got to be. Like,
every
Google search people make.
They were talking to somebody in this article. I think it was a person who ran like a cooking site or something, you know, like a recipe site. And they said that the traffic that they're getting is basically, I'm paraphrasing, but it's dropped off a cliff because, you know, I want to make X. How do I make X? Well, Google scraped all that info and they run it through their AI agent engine and give you a response. Why do I bother clicking when the recipe's right there? Like, you know, I don't think this is anything new, right? Because they've had this idea of like the sidebar on Google showed you restaurant information or local providers or whatever, even with a phone number on it. So maybe you were less inclined to click on that website, but maybe this is just amplifying right. it even more now. I don't know.
And it's like, if you're Google and you're doing this, what does it mean for your ad business that you're not directing traffic to these sites? I guess you're like, where do you put the, I guess you're putting ads in the overviews now? Like sponsored.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't
sponsored
know.
Results.
I would think, like, I know nothing about the ad business. I would think they would be a little nervous, wouldn't they? Like, because unless, to your point, like, unless they can figure out how to jam an ad into that AI summary now, you look up how to bake a cake and they give you an ad for a flour company. So you click on the flour because you realized when you wanted to bake your cake, you didn't have flour. But I don't know, man. I think things are going to change. Like,
they could, I mean, they could easily make their money just by charging exorbitantly for top results, right, in the AI overview or whatnot.
Yeah.
But you got to wonder, like, I guess a lot of these smaller sites will probably start to peter out if they haven't already.
Yeah. Well, yeah. one of the things that they said in there was that increasingly, you know, the old days where you would think about search engine optimization, right? How do you rank well so somebody clicks on that ad, or not the ad, but the link, right? Now it's like, how do you build your site with agents in mind? Because now maybe your strategy is, because there's lots of, what do they call it? Attribution, right? Like, so if I maybe run a query looking for something in my little chat bot, then it gives me the little links at the bottom that says, hey, this is where this came from. People saying maybe that's where traffic comes from. So maybe you have to rework your websites to make them easier for agents to read. I don't know.
Yeah. Or just provide good, accurate information, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I Googled Google revenue by category. Let's see here. This is 2025. Let's see. Google search and other generated approximately $224.5 billion, remaining the core driver of advertising revenue in 2025. So,
okay.
A couple hundred billion.
So, obviously they're not lacking in in income right now.
Not right now. No, they're good for a bit. Let's see. Oh, we already talked about the OpenAI cuts, right? And we sort of already touched on the fact that I would suspect in the article, one of the articles I was reading, they're like, oh, well, we're able to cut the prices because we're more efficient now in training models. And I'm like, sure, sure. I think it's because DeepSeek's, what did you say? It's 4 cents.
It's like 3 or 4 cents to do the same work. Yeah.
Yeah. I would suspect that's probably more of what's driving those prices down versus efficiency. But hey, you spin the story any way you want.
The margins have to be so good on these things. There's no way. There's no way they're.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Speaking of dropping traffic, Reddit is sort of upset about AI overviews because it's dropping traffic to Reddit.
Oh, the irony.
Right? And it was so good. The CEO said that people still really want, I hope it wrote it down here. Give me a second. They want deep discussions and passionate debates, and they can only get that on Reddit. I'm like, I don't know. I don't have many deep discussion, or I don't see many deep or passionate discussions or debates on Reddit. I mostly just see the cesspool of the internet. But yeah, they're a little upset.
Yeah. Well, maybe they shouldn't have licensed their content to Google to train models on that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, they're actually saying in the article that they're considering canceling their licensing deal. It's worth an estimated $60 million a year. And it's basically saying that in some cases, the Google AI overviews are reducing traffic to websites by nearly half. I think the ship has sailed, right? On you can cancel your licensing deal at this point, but we already have enough data to train anything into eternity at this point. So, yeah.
Oops.
Another good one. Did you hear about Sam Altman and his parenting advice from the week?
I did hear about this. Wow. Really good stuff.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff.
The first thing I thought is, you know, a company worth that amount of money and being that important to like technology right now, you would think that they would have media training or be able to sort of understand that you probably shouldn't give advice to people about how they should be raising their kids. Like, I don't have kids, so like I'm not going to chime in on this at all, but I saw it and I was immediately like, ugh, that's not going to end well.
It's
right?
Rough.
Yeah, so basically the gist of the story is you should connect all of your calendars, your kids' calendars, your calendars together,
right?
And then a really great idea would to make a podcast off of that, and then when you're driving to school in the morning or whatever, you can have the podcast tell you about what it is that your kids are doing and stuff like that. And like the best comment was like the first one I read is, "How about you just talk to your kids?"
I was gonna say, instead of, you know, just having that conversation, yeah. I guess.
God forbid you have to have a human conversation when you're in the minivan going to school in the morning. yeah, crazy. Okay, but I am gonna flip this idea on its head. Okay, actually really love the idea of building custom podcasts, not to learn about what your kids are doing. Okay, like that's just that's weird. But I'm studying right now for a cert. Imagine that. And reading this article, I was like, I wonder. If I'm going through a study session and I'm primarily doing it all with Claude, okay? I'll let you know how it goes when I take the exam and I'm like, Claude,
that'll be the real test.
You screwed me, man. Like, none of this is on this exam. So I've been studying for a couple weeks, and after reading this article and having a good chuckle about it, I was like, I wonder. So what I do now is I made a little skill. Right. And I can basically, it's called Rap Session. And as I'm going back and forth, it's creating like little quizzes for me to do and like flashcards and, you know, standard sort of studying techniques. And then as I go through it, it's like, you suck at this or you're good at this or whatever. And I summarize the session and it builds me a podcast. It was so awesome. Okay. Sweet. So the first time I did it, I'm like, okay, I want to make this podcast. It's like, yeah, no problem. We can do that. And so it just did it. I didn't know this, but your Apple comes with voices, but they're from like 2009, unless you, you can download newer voices for free up to a certain amount, or then you can have a subscription or something. You can pay for ones. So I didn't know that.
It's
right.
Kind of like a Siri pack or something.
Oh man. Yeah. I was like, so I ask it to do it. Right. Claude goes off and does its thing. And, I'm like, okay, cool. So it makes an MP4 or whatever. So I open it up and it was like robot voice, man. It was like, I actually laughed out loud. I'm like, oh my God. And it had like two podcasters, right? One man, one woman, and they're talking back and forth in total robot voice. So I'm like, okay. So I talked to Claude and I'm like, this is good, but what's with the robot voice? And it's like, right. Oh yeah. Oops. That's like the built-in stuff from Apple. You know, you've got a couple options. So I created another API key for OpenAI. I figured, you know, since Sam was talking about it, I might as well try out their voice stuff. And it created a 19-minute podcast from one of my sessions. It cost me 19 cents. And it is remember we were talking to the Modulate guys and the idea of human conversations like you and I right now, we're talking over each other. There's no latency between you and I talking. it's right. There's none of
a little
that.
Uncanny still, eh?
Yeah, it's you can tell it's not two real people. But, you know, I sat down after the study session. I'm going to do it again tonight. And I just listened to the podcast from the work that I've done. I don't know. There's lots of studies out there that say you got to write it down to make it really stick in your head. But I thought it was a pretty interesting use case. So maybe you don't want to use it to help you understand what your kids are doing. But I think it's a good way to consume information.
A general studying tool? Yeah. I would want to take that and go and write, like, take Matt Pocock's teach skill or write another custom learning skill or whatnot to build, like, a little curriculum and whatnot. And then, yeah, you use the podcast and then you use cue cards or flashcards and you have, like, a full spaced repetition setup that you can run on demand. That's actually really compelling.
Yeah. I've got a buddy. He is a cert junkie. Gets paid very well from his company to do it. So he's like, they're going to give me cash. I'm going to do them. So he's got a lot of them. And I think last time I talked to him, he's primarily using Gemini to do it. But he's like, it creates all of, just to your point, it creates the curriculum based off the exam guides. It creates flashcards, like study, like exams and stuff like that, that he can go through. And to your point, like, it's just repetition. It's you do it enough times that eventually you just remember that the answer to A is C. You know what I mean? Like, you know the concept at that point. I would have to think, if you're an exam site at this point, you don't have $224 billion of revenue to kind of get you through the bumps. I would have to think that those businesses are in deep shit.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be Chegg, that's for sure.
Yeah, insert like, any exam site at this point, or, you know, without naming anybody, the sites. Yeah, well, you just took the words out of my mouth, right? Like, the training sites. Yeah. I'm doing some training, and I was brainstorming with Claude about what content should we cover, how should it look, and all that. It built the slide decks for me. It's my information, but it built the slide decks.
Oh, wow.
And then it's like, oh, you forgot about this. You forgot what about this part? And I'm like, nah, I think that's too deep down in the weeds, but let's talk about this. And it's like, here's the reference page from the AWS documentation on that product. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. Like, I know people are like, oh, wait, are you sure it's true? But, man, I think it's going to be a tough slog.
Yeah, and you could be like, hey, write me up a quick quiz on this thing or whatever, right? And
yeah.
Throw it up in HTML. And
that's exactly what I'm doing.
Browse on localhost.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Cue cards. It's even getting snarky with me when I'm like, I know this. And it's like, you told me you knew that. And you only got like two of the questions right, man. You don't know that. So, pretty interesting stuff. What's the last thing I have here? Let's see. Oh, we've talked about Meta and how Meta was like kind of AWOL.
Oh yeah.
They just released two new things, Muse Code and Muse Spark. And I tried to figure out what the hell these things are. Okay. So Muse Spark originally announced, I don't know when they announced it.
Was
a model purpose built for Meta products.
Okay, so like your Instagrams and your
Facebook and all. I think it kind of lived on those platforms. Okay, but now there's a new version of it, and it's Muse Spark 1.2, which is now a coding update. So you can run what they called long horizon coding tasks. So I'm assuming that means, they run for long periods of time, right? Maybe it's not just meant for Meta products anymore. I don't know. And then the other one was just Muse Code, which is a terminal coding agent, which allows you to create agent loops, things we talk about all the time, agent loops, and run asynchronous agents in the background that essentially can enhance or basically help that main agent complete tasks on your behalf. The one thing that I thought was pretty cool, which I think is also built into Kiro Crew, is that when you're running Muse Code, it creates an event log, local event log, of everything that it did. And then if there's a crash or any sort of interruption, you can pick up where you left off. But I guess you could also use that for auditing purposes to understand kind of what the heck it was doing. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Kiro Crew does that as well. I remember reading that somewhere, but I didn't dig into it. So that's all the news that I had.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Looks like they co-trained the model and the harness. So they trained them together. So any performance you see with Mew Spark 1.2 is only for use on Mews, I guess.
Yeah, I was having a hard time understanding how they felt like they were meant to be used together, but I couldn't quite figure out.
Yeah.
Like, why would I use Mew Spark over Mew's code? I don't know. Right. So
you would use them together. You would have to, I think.
Yeah. It seems that way, right? You can install it on your EC2 instance and see how it goes for coding tests.
Maybe I will. I'll have every harness, every API key available.
You're creating your own system. You're creating your own open router, and then you just have like the agent that's the gatekeeper at the front that says, "Oh, I'm going to give this to Muse. I'll give this one to GLM." Away you go, right? Yeah. Very good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very good. Well, this has been a bit of a marathon because I was on multiple soapboxes. We're well over an hour at this point. I was all keyed up tonight, man.
Stacking them up.
Yeah, stacking them up. That's Do you have up. any recommendations to end the week?
So I saw a couple things. I saw the new Spider-Man movie. It was decent.
Yeah.
It was felt more like a Spider-Man movie than the other Tom Holland Spider-Man, so it was certainly a thing you can watch. But the standout for me was the new season of King of the Hill. I don't know if you've ever watched that show, but it's
King of the Hill.
They renewed it.
That's the one where all the guys are standing on their at the fence all the time?
Yes.
Animated series?
Yeah, it's that one.
Yeah. I've never really watched it. Is it really good? Okay. We've been watching Furious. You heard about this?
Oh, I think I have.
It's like, you know, murder mystery. It's got some topics that, you know, might make people uncomfortable. It's on Disney and it's Hulu. And I found that Hulu makes a lot of really good content. So it's only about 3 or 4 weeks in. I don't know if it's 8 or 10 episodes. It's got Scoot McNairy in it, who's like a local cop, which I love him from Control Alt Delete. Like, I saw him in this and I'm like, I think I have to watch Control Alt Delete again just because I'm old and, you know, that's sort of my era of computing. Like we were talking with Darko last week. And then it's got, I can totally see her. I can't remember her name. She was in Shameless for like one of the main characters in there. Emily Rossman, maybe, or something like that. It's a pretty good show. We've enjoyed it.
Yeah,
Amy Rossman, that's it. So it's a pretty good show. So enjoying that. I don't know if I have any other recommendations, man. I've been spending way too much time right here. And I need to go and do something else. Maybe I'll play a little Battlefield tonight. Grind out some weeklies, right?
Get those
things done, man. Unlock my new gear. So maybe I'll do that. That'll kill some time instead of listening to my study podcast. Woo, that's exciting. All right, man.
Hopefully effective.
Well, yeah, hopefully effective. I guess I'll know in a couple weeks. We'll find out. Yeah. Somebody actually, speaking of AWS exams, somebody told me today, and I haven't confirmed this. It's not that I don't believe them. I haven't seen it myself. That they're retiring the networking specialty.
Wow.
You know what I say? Good riddance.
Good. You've always said that one was the absolute worst one.
The worst one. The two worst ones, and I have a hard time deciding which is the actual worst, machine learning specialty and the networking specialty. Killers, man.
Art, so.
Oh yeah, they're both gone. Good riddance. I won't miss either of them. I think it was the networking one where like that gave me severe imposter syndrome the first time I took it.
Oh yeah.
Like I was like, oh man, I guess I gotta change careers. This is bad.
Was it like all the OSI layer stuff or
Well,
just
I don't
like really
know.
specific network setups?
Really specific network setups. Like, I remember there
Okay.
being a lot of very specific BGP questions. And I'm
Oh God, yeah, that's a
okay.
killer.
Yeah, like, I understand that in very specific situations you need to know that, but like, don't you tell me to use the transit gateway? And really, all I need to do for that is give it the BGP ASN. Like, do I need to know the inner workings of BGP 9.5 times out of 10 on AWS? I would love somebody to prove me wrong, but I don't think you do need to know that. And I remember that exam just kicking my ass the first time I took it. Yeah. We've just closed the laptop and we're
Yeah.
like, what the hell just happened,
Nope.
man? This is not good. Yeah. So, yeah, good riddance. I'll see you later. They're just gonna bring it back as a foundational exam that's not really a foundational exam.
Yeah,
Yeah.
just like the ML one. Yep,
Yep. Yeah,
makes
exactly.
sense.
All right, man. Well, unless you got anything else there, I
No,
think that's the show.
that's a podcast,
Yep, you know what
pretty
it
sure.
means. You know what that means.
Oh boy.
Cool outro music. We'll see everybody next week. Bye.